You're listening to Practically Ideal.
You gotta be practically ideal instead of just ideal.
Ready for some podcasting.
Oh, Logan, you got any better, man? All work and no play.
Welcome to Practically Ideal, the podcast for idealists who like to keep it practical. I'm Logan Bowe, podcasting from Brooklyn, New York. I'm joined again by the one, the only Bob Caswell in the Bay Area. How are you, Bob?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good, thanks. Today we review Star Trek Into Darkness as a Star Trek movie, a comic book movie, and a movie. Bob's got his hands on his new iPhone 5, and of course we'll give you the usual dose of pop culture, technology, and whatever else is on our minds. All this week on Practically Ideal. Let's rock! So, Bob, anything fun this week?
Yeah, so this just yesterday we went to the Monterey Bay Aquarium. Just a day trip, went down for an hour, the drive is an hour, a little longer than an hour. Went down for the whole day. I got to say, the weather here is just so perfect. I've never experienced such perfect weather. I mean, I have, but so consistently perfect for so many days in a row. I love it.
What's impressive is that you've just spent some time in Hawaii recently, and you're still gushing about the weather there.
Yeah, the weather in Hawaii is good, but it's like beach good, which means that it's like too hot for doing regular day things. So unless you're going for a swim, whereas the California weather is kind of the opposite. You kind of don't want to go for a swim because it's not hot enough, but doing your regular life is just like perfect. It's always in the low 70s, whereas Hawaii is always in the mid 80s if Fahrenheit for those. Yeah.
All right. Well, cool. I have to say, I imagine the weather there is pretty good. Cool.
It is. What about you? Anything new and exciting this week?
Yeah. So I had a dinner party last week.
Oh.
Yeah. You know, I felt like hosting one for a few friends, and so I did. I think I'm a pretty decent hostess when it comes down to it. So there's that. And
hostess.
You know? Well, yeah. That's. I don't know what to say. The duties of a hostess, I feel like, are in my skill set. And, you know, you want to have a social calendar? Have a social calendar. So I just decided to make it happen. And I invited some people and had a lot of fun.
How quaint. I like the idea of dinner parties. It feels like something from, you know, another generation or I don't know. But people still do those, I guess.
Yeah, and it feels very grown up, certainly.
Right.
But I cashed it out a bit. I incorporated a potluck element. Like, everyone just brings something, whatever. Let's keep it casual but fun.
Did you mail invitations?
No.
Or anything like that? Okay.
Nope, I didn't. I scrambled and tried to get people invited, and some of them couldn't make it, so I scrambled to get more people invited. Luckily, my house isn't that big, so it wasn't huge. But I filled it up, and it was fun. It was a lot of fun.
Nice, cool. Love it.
All right, Bob. So we mentioned this a little bit last week, but I want to get more into it. Let's talk about your iPhone.
Oh, what about it? What would you like to know?
I've been thinking about this, Bob. And so I want to tell the story of Bob and smartphones from my perspective, and I want you to argue, quibble, or correct me where I'm wrong, okay?
Okay, let's do it.
Okay, going to be honest. I'm going to call you out, Bob. I don't think you've really been riding the wave on the cutting edge of smartphone technology all that much so far. At times, you've had some interesting devices, but I feel like you've kind of almost been held hostage to getting a better deal instead of geeking out on your iPhone or on your phone.
Really? Wow. Well, so I don't get any credibility for getting the first Google phone, the T-Mobile, the G1, back in the day, I guess 2008-ish or whenever it was. Does that not count for being on the cutting edge? Or?
Well, let's talk about that, right? Okay, so you started out with that early Android phone. It was the first Google phone, you're saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so there's something there. I mean, but back then, Android was sort of a novelty, interesting, but honestly, in my opinion, pretty far behind iPhone in both the hardware and software. But I remember you were excited because it had a physical keyboard, and you chose to make trade-offs to get that feature, in my mind.
Right. Well, it was a smartphone with a physical keyboard, but it wasn't a BlackBerry. So it had like that trifecta of, you know, because it had apps. And I remember there was a lot of hype, like a lot of hype around this phone. And ironically, it was both justified and not, because the phone was a piece of crap. V1 product with all sorts of buggy slowdowns. Like Windows 95-esque sort of stuff. You know, the first time Google's doing like a touch-based interface on a phone or whatever. But at the same time, it's justified because it is now taking over the world in terms of the default input. So I feel like that lends credibility to me. How? I'm not sure, but I swear it was...
Okay, so you're telling me this was that the first Android phone to be released?
It was, yeah. It was an exclusive to T-Mobile. It was bigger than anybody thought it would be in hindsight for what it spawned, but at the time it was more indecisive, or not indecisive, but undecided whether or not it was really relevant. So point for you on that front, because in the context of then, it wasn't amazing as it might be now to say that I had an Android phone.
Well, I'm actually going to give you a little bit more of a point than I originally did for having the first Android phone. I didn't realize it was the first. But going to go a little further. Didn't you have that phone for a long time? I feel like I was on like my third iPhone by the time you upgraded.
Yeah. I think it came out in 2008 or 9, and I did keep it for the full 2-year contract, which was a long time for the V1 Android phone, while the iPhone kept iterating and had already been out for a year or more before I got that phone anyway. And then you're going to probably rub in the fact that I went with another V1 of yet another underdog.
That certainly was next. So it was an early Windows phone, right?
Yes, it was.
Which was honestly not ready for prime time. Am I right?
You're right. Yeah. It's not like the current batch of Windows phones are that much different, but there's a lot of patched up. There's a lot of things that evolved to make it much better, even though on the surface they look very similar.
And how long did you have that one?
Another 2 years.
Oh, Bob. Well, that's fine. I'm just saying, not riding the wave of the cutting edge. But now you have your HTC 8X, and that's a serious phone that's certainly closer to the cutting edge. But I still feel like with Windows Phone in that generation, there were significant trade-offs, because you had that or the Nokia Lumia, and I'm thinking primarily of the lack of LTE capability. But that's a better phone, I think.
Yeah, and in fact, I still miss that phone. I mean, I have it. It's in the other room. The iPhone's here next to me, though, because it's hard for me to switch phones. And we talked about this a little bit. I can't tell all my contacts or friends to call me certain times of the day or days of the week on one device and then use the other one for other days. But truth be told, yesterday when I was out and about with my iPhone, it was the first time I used it for taking pictures and for general localized lookup stuff on the fly, because it was the first kind of leisurely day out in the sun, so to speak.
Oh, yeah, how'd that go?
It went okay. It was actually underwhelming, to be honest. Oh. Like, it barely passed. I actually missed my Windows phone, because the Windows phone has a hardware button for taking pictures, and it's easier to get to. The iPhone, same goes for the UI for sharing my photo on Facebook. The iPhone isn't as graciously interconnected. The menu wasn't as obviously located. And then if you want to tag somebody, you can't tag them until after you've posted the photo instead of before, like you can on the Windows phone. There's just a lot of little things where my flow was like messed up, and it felt like it could just be a learning curve thing. But even after doing it a few times, it felt like the iPhone... you know, ironically, tacked on this sort of capability or feature, like the streamlined, super quick, take a photo, post it to Facebook. That wasn't what the iPhone was originally designed for, whereas the Windows phone sort of knew that was a big deal and designed it from the ground up to have that be super simple. So, you know, props to the Windows phone people for making me miss their phone while I was out for the day, right?
Yeah, and I'll co-sign that the iPhone, for being kind of intuitive on the one hand, is not perhaps as easy or streamlined. But question I have is, how did you feel about the pictures?
You know, that's another thing that we touched on briefly last time. They're good, they're solid, but I don't necessarily see them as a step up or anything better than what I would, certainly better than my original Windows phone, but again, that phone's like 3 years old now. But this 8X, the HTC 8X that I just got 5 or 6 months ago, I think it takes just as good pictures, if not, well, I don't want to say if not better, because I really can't tell, which is, I guess, the point, is it seems like on par. The Windows phone is good, so is the iPhone, but it wasn't anything that blew me away.
Okay, sounds good. So, all right. Anyway, now you have your iPhone, and we've started to hear some comparisons, and I just wanted to say that probably, well, okay, backing up. One point before I got there, I just want to get on the table that for a techie guy, you've made a ton of decisions based on saving a few bucks here and there with your phone. And the reason I bring this up, not to give you a hard time, mostly, though, it's because I really think this is surprisingly, perhaps, an area where I've been much more into the latest and greatest technology than you have been. So I just want to let the people know out there, this might be the only thing, but... but I want to say I win on this one.
Yeah. In case anybody was doubting, Logan knows technology too.
Yeah.
Okay. That's funny. Well, if I don't know if we're done with phones, but I wanted to touch on another technology aspect of my life, which happened in the last week, which I think is kind of big, but it's kind of meta. I don't know. We'll see.
Well, are we done with phones? We've heard a few comparisons that your Windows phone is a little more streamlined in taking pictures and posting them, that the iPhone was good but not great as far as navigating you around. Any other comparisons you want to mention?
I think that's it. I mean, it does have more apps. Like the Monterey Bay Aquarium has its own app, and I was like, oh cool, see, look, I couldn't do this on the Windows phone. But then I downloaded the app and it's like, oh, this is one of those apps that's a waste of a time, you know. It's like, I'm going to make an app as a destination because that's what people do today, is have an app. But it didn't really, after using it for 2 minutes, I'm like, not having this on my Windows phone is actually a better scenario than having just like everybody has to make an app for the iPhone. That's so.
Sure. But in favor, I think some of the things you mentioned to me off air were that you were impressed with the snappiness of the browsing and things like that on the iPhone.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And the LTE is super helpful. So I shouldn't be so down on the iPhone, even though that's the more interesting, because people are used to praise for the iPhone, but it's, I'll jump on that bandwagon. I love the browsing, and it's just super fast, and I can get to my web pages. And there's also like these cool buttons. You can press like this read button, and it just like takes out all the ads and makes it so that your New York Times or whatever article is just beautiful text on the page. And that's a nice little feature that Windows phone doesn't have, or at least I haven't found. So that's cool.
Okay, cool. All right. And yeah, all right, cool. I'm glad you you have a phone that some people, or it's a current flagship phone on a particular line. And so I think, well, welcome to the big time, Bob.
Well, thank you. Yeah, at least for a few months. And I'll probably keep it longer than most techie people, but I'm going to enjoy my basking in the sunlight of being up to date on phone technology for the time that it is.
Awesome. But you said you had other technology you wanted to talk about. You can win back your cred here. What you got?
Well, this is more like a lifestyle choice.
And hear
me out. I don't want to oversell it, but I think it's important. So I just moved, and part of that move is setting up internet in a new place. And of course, there usually aren't very many options, especially if you want super fast speeds. And there's usually one or two providers. And I went with Comcast because they're the reigning champion, for better or for worse, for doing what I need with multi-room DVRs and fast internet. And they had a decent sign-up package and blah, blah, blah. But the problem is, usually your internet only comes into your place of residence in one location, and you have to choose that location. And which means that either you have wires going through your home if you want all your devices wired, or you use wireless for everything other than the default location where your internet comes in, which is generally your main computer that is wired.
Sure.
You with me?
Yes.
Okay, so when we first moved in, I just psychologically assumed that I wanted the internet and everything coming into the room that would be like the quote-unquote office, and that's where the main computer would be. And that's how I've always done it for like the last 10, 15 plus years of using internet. And doing that sort of model. So that's what I did. And then after a couple weeks of using it that way, I realized something huge, something big.
Dun, dun, dun.
I don't use the internet in my office for much more than web browsing or I guess Skyping or chatting like this, mostly with you for our podcast. But otherwise, my main internet usage is my Xbox for online gaming / Netflix / movie streaming of, you know, from other services. And it was noticeably annoying that I was using wireless in my living room, and the quality was suffering. And I've complained before in previous, probably been a while, podcasts about how I hate how Netflix doesn't give you the option to say, no, please, I can wait 30 seconds more. Don't start streaming it until it's HD. I am not watching YouTube on my TV. Anyway, so after a couple of weeks of doing this, this is the first time in my life where I called up Comcast and I had them come back out here and I'm like, switch it. I want the main internet feed going into the living room. And I bought a wireless adapter for my desktop, which is crazy because like the me of 10 years ago would be like, what? That is, you're going to hate it. But then I realized like, well, what do I use my main desktop for that needs so much internet? Anyway, maybe I'm making a big deal out of nothing.
That actually goes along with something I read this week that really surprised me, but doesn't surprise me if I think about it. But Netflix accounts for approximately a third of all the bandwidth use in the whole United States. They're streaming.
Whoa, yeah, that doesn't surprise me, and it's probably more than a third of Bob's streaming in his house. So, yeah, so I think it's crazy because I used to like think my PC was my gateway to the internet, and in some ways it still is. I mean, I still have a laptop. I still, it still maybe is where I spend more time, but even that's debatable. But definitely as far as bandwidth, and because these HD movies and things are, they require quite the feed, and I feel like wireless isn't quite there, and my center of connected life has moved from the office to the living room, I guess is the larger point, which I don't know what that means, but it feels significant.
I like it as a lifestyle choice, Bob. You're you are embracing the new normal.
Yes. So do I get credibility or did I like, am I late like with the phones?
One, definitely.
Okay. All right. Cool.
All right. Bob, finally, a big movie event I was excited about last week, and I mean Star Trek Into Darkness. I don't think Star Trek movies used to have the event label attached before the reboot in 2009, but now they do, and they're a bit different. Spoilers. You can't really talk about this movie without some significant spoilers, so we're not even going to try. We've given you a week to watch it, but if you still haven't seen it, stop here and come back after you do. That's the spoiler warning.
Nice. I feel like we should put like the timestamp in the notes or something, but spoiler.
We'll have our assistant get right on that.
All right. Perfect.
Let's talk Star Trek, Bob. Here's the first thing that I want us to riff off of. Star Trek in this day and age is really like a comic book movie, wouldn't you say?
You know, I saw you say that on Facebook, and my knee-jerk reaction was to not like it. I'm like, no, that's too easy to sum up. And then the more I thought about it, I'm like, I guess he's kind of right.
hit me with your pros and cons.
Well, I feel like Star Trek sort of predates the comic book revolution in terms of movies, and deserves more than that. And by just labeling it as a comic book movie, it allows it to get away with a lot of things that otherwise it shouldn't get away with. It should be more pure science fiction-y instead of just like, which science fiction itself has the made-up rules problem, but I feel like the made-up rules problem with good science fiction was handled better than the way comic books have just assumed this latest generation of movie watchers can like deal with made-up rules on the fly even more so. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, there are pros and cons of it being a comic book movie. I'm not saying it's all good or all bad. I'm just saying it seems to be in that category a lot more than an old-school Star Trek movie.
Yeah, it just sort of implies that it's trying too hard, or it's just selling out, or it's becoming more accessible, lowest common denominator. Those are the con side that were getting me feeling like, oh, calling it a comic book movie is taking away from its Star Trek originality cred or something.
You're a comic book movie fan, I thought. You love your X-Men's. You liked Iron Man 3 recently. I wasn't necessarily meaning that as a dig. I thought that you might appreciate the good in that potentially. No, you're feeling like it's disrespectful.
As odd as it sounds, yeah, like I like comic book movies for what they are, and in fact this is a good meta conversation because I feel like I do give them the benefit of the doubt, or I when I do my movie reviews, comic book movies are kind of looked at through a different lens. I'm not comparing them to The Godfather. For what they are and what we've agreed to suspend, what is it, the suspension of disbelief or whatever, they're very enjoyable, but they were kind of more guilty pleasure like enjoyment on as a whole, and some are much better and say things about society or have better production value or flow, character development, all those good movie-esque things. Like I think X-Men is transcends a little bit more. This is my opinion. Not to be too snobby on X-Men because it's not that amazing, but yeah, I always felt like Star Trek. Maybe this is again. I'm all these disclaimers. Like nerd alert. I just assumed it was on a higher plane, and it didn't need to like stoop as low as comic book movies to just like, you know, erase any sort of. I don't know what to call it, any sort of credibility out the door. Like, oh, it's a comic book movie? Okay, then it can get away with a lot more.
Well, it did a lot to be a comic book movie, right? So here's my list of some of the things. For one, I feel like even the actors sort of look comic booky, or to be more accurate, it looks like the same old actors remarkably well, except they're like the CW version of the old characters. I don't know if that makes any sense to you, but there's just that look that the actors have on shows on that network. Like I'm thinking like Smallville, for example, they look like they could all be in that cast. It's like they have baby faces that make them look super young. And at the same time, it's kind of how you'd imagine a comic book drawing of the old characters. I don't know. Am I alone here?
No, it's funny that you say that because especially in the first one, which I think came out in 2009, it did feel like a bunch of kids on a spaceship. And this one, maybe they've aged just slightly enough or it's grown on me, but it didn't bother me as much, or it wasn't quite as noticeable. But but yeah, it does feel like like they could break out into song and it could be an episode of Glee or I don't know.
Yeah, something like that. And here might be a good time to mention that one of the things I am most impressed with about this new version is how the new actors really do catch the spirit of the old characters for the most part. Uhura is maybe the most different. She's a feisty, sassy young woman, love interest more now. And new Chekhov is probably the most exaggerated version of the old Chekhov.
Right.
But it's remarkable how easy it is to believe that these characters are the same old characters. Bravo to whoever's in charge of casting.
Yeah. And that's a praise or something to be added to the positive side of this new Star Trek reboot. Meaning that makes it feel like it has more credibility somehow, even though that's maybe not what should boost credibility, but I really like how the characters are preserved in a way that doesn't make it so that it's too comic booky, but then maybe it still is.
Well, you mentioned reboot. That's another big one. So the whole idea of a reboot is a big one in the comic book worlds. Lots of franchises go back to the beginning and they tell the story a little differently, but with a lot of things the same, but not everything. That's like a classic comic book universe thing, this reboot, right?
Right. And I have to say, the way Star Trek did it was super annoying, but whatever.
Yeah, the old time travel alternate universe, that pretty much lets everything happen, huh?
Yeah, that may as well be the formula for any franchise reboot if you're on the... if you're just not creative or want an easy out, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, and I guess the reason comic books do it, and I guess there are some upsides here, is that it allows them a lot more leeway to take liberties with the stories that they want to tell instead of have to stick within. By now, there's so many years and series and movies of official Star Trek stuff that it might be kind of constraining, and now they can, you know, color outside the lines to some extent. But Or if you want to say something.
Well, I was just going to say that, that's what made this movie better for me than the first one, is like they got that mess of a reboot out of the way, and now we could... They still kind of threw back to that with the two Spocks even in this movie, which was kind of annoying to me, but it was like for 5 seconds instead of for like half the movie is just rebooting the franchise.
Yeah, fair enough. For me, you know, I'm a Star Trek fan way more than I'm a comic fan, and for some reason I find the reboot thing kind of jarring. It's like, wait, I've invested all this time knowing the Star Trek universe, and now I have no idea if that can help me in an understanding any of this. You know, things are the same, but not quite. And now I don't. And I also don't know what to do with this new information. Like, am I supposed to fit this in to the Star Trek universe, or we're going to have like a trilogy or something and then forget this ever happened?
Yeah, so you're saying you would have rather them just do parallel stories that are like, oh, and here's a story we didn't tell between, you know, movie 3 and 4 from the old one. Or because that, to me, creates another problem of like, oh, it's in the past. It's already happened, even though maybe that's less of a problem. I don't know.
Well, yeah, I definitely see the tension there. And that's why I said in my own little mini review that the Star Trek fan in me and the movie fan in me had different opinions about this movie. And in a weird way, I think the Star Trek fan in me liked it more than the movie fan in me. I think I left it sort of ambiguous in my mini review. People took it one way or the other. But but I liked it as a Star Trek fan to see all these references like Dr. Marcus, Khan, some of the references to Star Trek II. I like picking those out and remembering, oh, that's a reference to that. That's a reference to that. But just as a movie, I guess, as we get to more of my overall thumbs up or thumbs down, I feel like there were lots of flaws, I gotta say.
Mm. Okay, that's interesting, because I thought you just said that as a Star Trek fan, you didn't, you know, the fact that it's a reboot, but that somehow didn't bother you in the aggregate overall. Maybe the comic bookiness of it took over, and the Star Trek throwbacks were enough fun, but not negativity of ruining your baby or anything. So that's good.
You're right. Interesting. I don't know that that's entirely consistent, but maybe the fact that it's like a comic book movie just lets me give up and have lower expectations for the Star Trekness of it. I don't know what it is, but yeah, intellectually, I had more problems with it than I did emotionally watching it. Because it's pretty fun, action-packed, good pace. You have a good time while you're watching it. I wasn't necessarily watching the clock or anything.
Right, exactly. And I thought that the comedy in it was actually pretty good, too, which is nice to see it, you know, done well in an action movie. Because a lot of times there's like the Schwarzenegger delivery of trying to be funny, but it's funny because you're laughing at it instead of because of it.
The comedy, what you mean, like damn it, Jim, I'm a doctor, not a whatever he said.
Yeah, it's stuff like that, because it had like this nice throwbacks to the old franchise, but there were some other Kirk Spock interactions which were pretty funny, that were original but still tied to the old formula of how those two interacted. I don't know, I really enjoyed that.
Cool. So I don't know. Do we need to do two different reviews? Like, how would you classify it as a comic book movie? Or are you on board with my dueling perspectives on this movie? Comic book movie versus movie, or not?
I think I am. Because as a comic book movie, which is kind of how... I guess maybe that's how I sort of rated it, even though I felt bad thinking of it in that context when you put it that way, but as like an action science fiction comic book, all those things combined movie, I went out bold and gave it a 5 out of 5, which I got some flack for, and you know, which I'm now, not because of this, but it's a long time running thing, I'm considering reevaluating my formula so I can do like 4.5 out of 5s and get a little more granular, because as we've talked about, there are 5 out of 5s and 5 out of 5s, and this isn't like a Godfather 5 out of 5, but for what it was setting out to do, like I said, it was past the ugly reboot stuff that bugged me in the first one. It was great comedic timing, great action. I love the moral dilemma stuff. There was some suspension of disbelief, but I felt like it got away with it a little bit more because of the Trekkiness and space future stuff. So for what it was and what it was trying to do, I thought it hit the nail on the head and was pretty close to Perfection with all those disclaimers. Okay, perfection's a loaded term, but anyway.
So nice, well-paced, yeah. Well-acted, well-executed action movie, or comic book movie, as I would say.
Right, yeah, yeah. And in the real movie world, we ding it half a star, or I ding it half a star for that.
Yeah, so let's talk about what we liked about it. What did you think about Benedict Cumberbatch as Khan?
I liked him. I think he's a great actor.
You familiar with him elsewhere?
I've seen him in Sherlock, and I've seen him in HBO show that came out that was kind of, I didn't finish, but he was in that. There was a third thing I saw him, whatever. But yeah, he's got that like villain look, but still handsome, and the British accent, and he's still badass. In a bad way. I don't know. I thought he was great. Great casting.
Yeah, I did too. Did you know he was Khan before you saw it? Or like at what point did you know?
No, I didn't know. Which was like a cool reveal surprise for me. I guess there was a lot of buzz before, but I wasn't enough into the pre-movie show to know that.
Yeah, me either. You know, when it comes to movies especially like this, but I'll be honest, any movies, I'm not really looking ahead trying to predict things. And so I knew Dr. Marcus, and I thought, oh, that's Star Trek 2 right there. But I didn't necessarily go the step further and say, oh, so he must be Khan necessarily. And so it was a surprise for me when I heard it too, and that was cool. I was happy with that.
Yeah, so that didn't, because, you know, he's quite the different Khan from the Khan we're used to or whatever. So that didn't bother you, or again, the paying homage to the original series worked in your favor, didn't get in the way or anything.
Yeah, I you know, when it comes to comic book movies, I'm just sitting there, you know, let it happen to me. I'm your willing suspender of disbelief. Let's just be along for the ride.
Okay, cool.
And it worked for me. Okay, so now let's talk about it on movie terms. Now, what makes you maybe ding it half a star, a hypothetical half a star?
Well, it did have a lot of crazy science fiction-y things that, you know, on the one hand, I'm in favor of giving it the benefit of the doubt because it's a Star Trek movie and, you know, science can be reason enough for anything to happen 1,000 years in the future or whenever it's set. But even some of those plot points were pretty out there, and gosh, I'm trying to think of a specific one.
Oh, I got enough of them.
I guess the big spoiler, which we already gave the spoiler alert, I'll give it again, is just the killing Kirk and then bringing him back to life.
Oh, yeah.
That was just...
Yeah, did you notice that the way that happened, they've like solved death now, right? You just...
I know, yeah. It's like, let's bottle up the Fountain of Youth now, and that's what the series is going to be about, is dealing with... the eternity of living forever.
Yeah, unless you're like decapitated or your body's destroyed or something. They can just... They even said they synthesized that blood, so they can just whip up some Khan blood and heal you no matter what, sounds like. So that's a bit much.
Yeah, and there was a lot of other things that were the perfect timing of like, oh, the shields are at, you know, 2%. Now let's go with our plan of what we were going to do.
Yeah.
But, you know, movies like... action movies do that all the time, the ticking time bomb syndrome. But and then there was the whole ending with Khan just getting refrozen, and that wasn't really explained. It's like, oh, we're not going to kill him, but we're going to freeze him with his family of frozen friends, and what's the point? I don't know.
Yeah, another one for me that I don't feel like they earned that moment in the end when it was like the mirror image, the reverse, where Kirk goes in and saves them by getting radiation poisoning, and then Spock is super upset. You know, in the original Star Trek, the Kirk-Spock relationship, you know, it's always been one of the great ones in pop culture history, and it was developed over, like, decades, really. But here...
Right.
These people didn't even like each other for most of the time they've been together. And they've only known each other for a little while anyway, so it just... They didn't earn, you know, the equivalent moral emotional payoff is what I want to say.
It did feel a little manipulative. It's like banking on the fact that you're already super vested in this, and you're like, well, I am sort of, but now you're making me think of the old series, and that's not the point. This is the reboot. So in this context, this is kind of a cheese ball.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know, though. Now that we just listed like four things that are all fairly significant, it makes me feel like, wow, we are really lenient. Maybe a half a star ding is being very generous, but I don't know. I think on balance, that those, all that stuff adding up to 2 minutes of eye rolling out of like a 2 hour awesome fest of the coolest thing ever. Yeah, 4.5 stars. I think that's fair.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's weird for me because I am actually a pretty big Star Trek fan, and I'm actually going to go with more like, get ready, like 3.5 stars as a movie. At the same time, I'm probably going to watch this several more times in my life, like way more than another movie I would rate that low. So I don't know. Maybe I need a better system for fitting my movie status in with my Star Trek fandomness. I don't know. But
really? So you're not on board with my contextualizing and saying, hey, in the genre that is science fiction / comic book movies / therefore, you know, there's some great inflation, or I don't know what to call it, but I don't want to have two movie reviews for all these, because it's like literally half the movies I watch are these types of movies, and I'm not going to be like, okay, compared to The Godfather, it's a 3.5, but compared to X-Men, it's 4.5. Like, that's too confusing, right?
I get what you're saying, and I can't denigrate your system. For me, it's just my personal system. I don't know if I give it extra credit for comic book / action movies. I know that you like that genre more than I do. I'm more indifferent to it, so I won't give it extra credit for that. And we'll have different ratings based on what you want, I guess.
Okay. All right. Well, let the people know that this episode is to be the explanation of that difference, because I feel like this is going to come up over and over again or something.
Yeah, and I feel weird giving it a lower rating, because huge Star Trek fan, of the Star Trek fan in me really enjoyed parts of it. I love whispering to Amy, oh, that means this. You probably don't know this, but anyway, I'll tell you later, but yeah, that's cool.
That's funny.
All right. Well, it's time for a new segment on the podcast, and it's Bob's Mini Movie Reviews. And as I'm reading this, I'm realizing we just shoehorned this in here, and we were going to do the Star Trek review as part of this. But, that's what happens on the fly. but as some of you may know, Bob's pretty active on social media, getting out quick, you know, more or less Twitter-length reviews of the many movies he sees. And a lot of times, Bob, you generate some buzz. Good and bad, I'll have to say, over those reviews. And we want to incorporate those into the podcast, because one of the reasons we're doing this is we have the goal of having fun conversations with cool people. I want to bring that onto the podcast, even if they happen partly on social media. So, let's get to this, Bob. You've seen and reviewed some movies recently, and you've done your mini reviews. Let's go down the list. What's first?
Okay, so first we're going to talk Pain and Gain. And I guess what I'm going to do here is read the review, because it's really not that long.
Perfect.
And we'll see if this works as a formula, and then talk about some of the responses. And
Let's do it.
Bob justifying why he saw it in the first place in certain cases. Okay, so Pain and Gain, 1 out of 5.
Wow, that's so rare to come from you. 1 out of 5.
Yeah, this is what I had to say. Drawn out and not funny with no real action, .. Takes a crazy premise and makes it downright boring. You know there's trouble when a movie has no less than 5 narrators and gives you no reason to care about any of them.
And so my little shot here is that you say no comedy and no action, but this is an action comedy, right?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And what I can't say in a short review is that there was like this sliding scale of stars being removed the longer I got into it. You know, because like 20 minutes in, I'm like, okay, this could be a good 3 out of 5, like, you know, a typical lukewarm, sure, run-of-the-mill sort of action comedy. But then it's like, I know the point when it's like, I mean 2 out of 5. I mean, okay, this shit sandwich is like not going anywhere. I could have walked out and given it a better rating.
I love it. Okay. Did you get any buzz about your review on social media?
Yeah, well, mostly people brought up a lot of easily discoverable things about it that indirectly could have made it so that I shouldn't have watched it in the first place. Like one comment, did Michael Bay write this turd sandwich and as well, or just direct it? And someone else said, I had such high hopes for Forces of the Rock, Michael Bay, and Marky Mark combining to make a cinematic masterpiece.
Ouch.
So there's some like jabs in here as like, this could have, you could have saved yourself some time and, you know,
yeah, but I'm
known from the get-go.
In your defense, you know, The Rock is sort of like the perfect cheesy action movie kind of person, right?
Yeah, and he's and I like Mark Wahlberg as someone who, you know, he's granted he's hit or miss, but like when he's hit, like, you know, everybody loves The Italian Job, which was kind of his first.
Yeah, sure.
Biggish success of being an action star, but also kind of with good dialogue and kind of badass sort of character. So the problem here is the premise. This movie was based on a true story.
Really?
Okay. Yes. And here's the problem with the true story. Okay, this is a mini spoiler alert. But it, the true story is about three dudes who are bodybuilders who decide that they want a better life and they just want to rip off rich dudes' lives, and they're dumb enough not to cover their tracks, but smart enough to get away with it for a certain amount of time as the you know, police system catches up to them. And really, they're all like the biggest douchebags ever. And the movie, like at first you're like, this is funny because they're douchebags, and then by the end you're like wanting to pull your hair out because you hate everyone. So they're the main characters, but there's nothing redeeming about them. And then you have this weird cognitive dissonance because The Rock and Marky Mark, Mark Wahlberg, you want to, and Anthony Mackie, even the third guy, he's not as well known as an actor, but you want to think of them as cool dudes. And so they're miscast because you're just hating how poorly designed these characters are based on this true story, which I guess Michael Bay thought would be interesting as a movie. But you just hate them, but you can't hate them because they're The Rock and Marky Mark. And, yeah, and it just gets worse and worse and worse. And then the movie like takes forever to show minute details of how they kill people. And then they just get away with doing other things that just make them the worst people ever. But then they're also, then the movie at the same time shows you these villains, quote unquote villains, that they're taking the lives of, who aren't good people either. So there's like, really, you just don't care about anyone. You're not rooting for the good guys because they're not good, and the bad guys are horrible too. And in the end, it's just like a turd fest of, it's just not interesting. You get bored by halfway through. Anyway, that's probably more than enough than anyone wants to know about that movie.
All right, got it. Okay, what's next?
Okay, Fast and Furious 6.
All right.
I gave this a 4 out of 5.
Wow.
Now, granted, on my new scale, in the spirit of, you know, I feel like I round up more than I round down. This is really more like a 3 out of 5.
Okay.
Excuse me, a 3.5 out of 5.
All right.
I got to, like, make this scale official. I don't know what I'm waiting for, but I feel like it uses too many characters in the Twitter feed or something. Like, 3.5 out of...
That's true. That's two extra characters, potentially.
Right. And then do I do, like, a 5.0 just to keep the... Anyway,
not
stupid.
On Twitter. Yeah.
So Fast and Furious 6, this is 4 out of 5 or 3.5 out of 5. Here's what I said. Almost tries too hard to be over the top with its action, but hey, that's the party I signed up for. The story is passable, even if mostly not needed, though in the end I would have gone a different route. I think Fast 5 is my favorite. So
okay, so you've been in on this franchise the whole way, almost the whole way.
Yeah, which is kind of funny because most of them are more like pure 3 out of 5s for me, but they're fun 3 out of 5s. Like, they're not waste of time movies, even though they are. That's the point, is, you know, escapism and just watching fast cars and action sequences. But I swear that it changed with the last one. Fast and the Furious 5 took it up a notch because it was just done better. The dialogue was better. The characters were more interesting, even though some of them, you know, were the same. They were just brought into light better. I really liked Fast and the Furious 5, although it had its own issues, and I think at the time I gave that one a 4 out of 5, and this one is slightly less good, but still better than all the others.
So before we get to the buzz, here's just my quick history with Fast and Furious franchise. So I saw the first one. I mean, that's been, what, 12 years ago, maybe longer. How old is this franchise?
I guess you're right. It was like 2001.
I feel like pretty young when I saw it. So I was like this whole different person. I was like two or three people ago. But I feel like I liked the first one okay. And then I dragged Amy to the second one. And she's like, oh, I hate that movie. And I'm like, yeah, I can't really defend it. Let's not see any more of these. And then the other value that Fast and Furious has brought into my life was after the fifth one, it's called Fast Five or something, right?
Right.
Bill Simmons and Adam Carolla did this like hour plus long podcast of, it was like half serious, half totally making fun of the movie review, where they just laughed about every single detail. And I hadn't even seen the movie, but I listened to that podcast and I loved it. Anyway.
Wow. That was on, that was for Fast Five?
Yeah.
Okay, that's funny, because that's the one I just said, I was just saying is like the best one, and I gave it a solid 4 out of 5, and you're like, I loved it, and I got back into the series because these two dudes that I like made fun of it for like an hour straight.
Well, that's all I have. That's all I have. What buzz did you get,
Bob? That's pretty funny. Well, I had a friend send me to an interesting pistogram or graphic of... that explains the ending of just how long the runway was. Now, this is a little bit of a spoiler, but it doesn't ruin anything because you can see it in the previews. The ending involves like this huge action sequence, which is like, really, it's too long. It's like 25 minutes long, and it's all while a plane is trying to take off with a bunch of cars chasing it and then attaching themselves to it, and then fight scenes inside the plane, outside of the plane, on the cars, jumping on the sides of the wings, like all the kind of like... everything you'd expect from over-the-top action movies all in one scene. But in order for that to be possible, the runway had to be like 10 times longer than the longest runway in the world. which is true and does, you know, ratchet down the credibility of the movie. But hey, who cares?
Yeah, you don't watch it to be credible. You watch it to be awesome.
Right. I mean, it's not like they tried to bring Kirk back to life with special synthesized blood.
Fair enough.
And then I also said, in the end, I would have gone a different route. And what I'm referring to here, and this one is a spoiler I don't want to give away, but some of the characters that they chose to deal with in certain ways, like, I like... the supporting cast almost more than the main cast with Fast and the Furious. I've always thought Vin Diesel wasn't really that badass. I always felt like he was trying too hard, which is, he's kind of a major character.
Yeah. He's been there since the beginning,
and,
right?
Right, but Fast Five, I felt like gave a lot more screen time to the ensemble, which is why I liked it a lot more than some of the others. Fast Six kind of goes back to like, you know, focus. It still has the same ensemble as Five, but it gives more time to Vin Diesel and the main characters, and that's where I'm saying, yeah, that's why Fast Five's better.
All right.
So I'd recommend it. It's a good time at the movies. Don't see Pain and Gain.
Cool. Any more on the list?
No, I think that's it for this past week.
Awesome. That was a lot of fun. We're going to do that more in the future, I think.
Yeah, I hope that's useful, fun, all those things.
Awesome. Well, let's hit many obsessions here, Bob, before calling it a podcast. Mine, I got one for you, Bob, and that is roasting chickens. I served roast chicken for my party last week, my dinner party, which means I also made one in advance to make sure I had it down. And roasting chickens, Bob, it's super easy and super good. You can get fancy if you want, but all you have to do really is just rub it with salt and pepper and roast it for like an hour. And you end up with one of those rotisserie chickens you can buy already cooked, except it's fresh from the oven and it's juicy and flavorful, and it's not so much meat that you don't know what to do with it like when you roast a turkey for Thanksgiving.
Right.
And also you can make a totally yummy stock with the bones and leftovers. And I seriously think I'm going to roast a chicken like every week now.
Is it hard? Like, doesn't it take a lot of time?
No. You just, like I say, I have this cast iron pan that I cook on the stove, but it's great for cooking it. So I just like mix my salt and pepper in a bowl, rub it all over, actually stuff a lemon right in there so it doesn't get dry on the inside, throw it in there at like 450 degrees, super hot, take it out in an hour, bam, an awesome roast chicken. It's really easy.
I feel like I'm missing out because that sounds healthy too.
Yeah.
And I love chicken. Nice. I you know, solid. Mini obsession that actually I'm probably going to try at some point.
I'm going to do another one today. I've got some rosemary to put on it, but that's, you know, sort of an optional add-on to add an herb. I think I'm going to do these, like I say, about every week. Easy, not too expensive, super good. My mini obsession.
Love it. My mini obsession is actually food related as well.
Okay.
And from a different angle maybe, but I said earlier, we went to Monterey Bay and I just love using Yelp for checking out restaurant reviews before I go to a new area. So my mini obsession is like finding the perfect place for a trip to a new area by reading up on it online before going there. And then either confirming or being annoyed at the Yelpers for misleading me. But in this case, I think they were pretty spot on. I picked two different restaurants, one for lunch and one for dinner. And I tried what people recommended. And the first one was this this place that their specialty is a quesadilla stuffed with crab and shrimp and caramelized onions. And it was really good. I really enjoyed it. And then the second place was this a restaurant called Passion Fish, and they're all about cooking fish and matching it with wine, and also very good. And if you're gonna go and do a day trip, you may as well get the best food out of it. Although part of me also likes the serendipity of just finding a great restaurant, you know, as you're walking down a city. But you never know; that could backfire, right?
It could. Now, I have to admit, I use Yelp a fair amount too. But let me know if this is ever an issue for you, Bob. It's like this emotional block or something I have for using Yelp too much. And I feel like I think of it equivalent to Amazon reviews, meaning it's usually pretty much right on. But sometimes, I guess I have a trouble admitting that other people have the same taste as I do. I want to be like, oh, but these are just people. They're not as cool as I am. They don't know what they're talking about.
I have a critical eye, yeah.
Even though I'm hardly ever proved wrong if I go by Yelp, I just, that's always in the back of my mind for some reason. I guess the snob in me.
Yeah, I have the same problem. Or sometimes I have my own confirmation bias where I'll just look at an aggregate review and it'll be like 4 out of 5 or 4.5 out of 5. And I'm like, it must be good. But then I'm like, but I got to check out the negative reviews. and then I just realize how circumstantial experiences can be, because people are like, it was the best day ever. They made it so that my birthday was perfect, and they even brought out a free cake. And I'm like, well, that has nothing to do. Why did you, that's why you gave it a 5 out of 5. And then the people who are giving it 1 out of 5 are like, I can't believe how long the wait was. Really?
Right. And if you're not going at a busy time, then that has nothing to do with you either.
Right. Yeah. And it just like ruins the whole formula. I'm like, no, like this review should mean something more than that.
That's right. That's right.
Oh, well, maybe I do need to find like a trusted food critic instead of assuming. We should do like a whole episode on crowdsourcing and its perils.
I feel like I have a lot to say. Probably more. I have more to say about that than is probably worth saying about that. But but yeah, that sounds like it might be fun.
Well, for now, that's the tease. Yeah, it's good and bad, but it worked for me this time. It was some good food yesterday.
Awesome. Well, that's today's Practically Ideal. Find us at practicallyideal.com and on iTunes and on Facebook and on Stitcher Radio. Follow us on Twitter. I'm at Logan Bow. Bob is at Bob Caswell. Tweet us or leave a comment about this episode or about anything else. Thanks for rocking with us.
Have a good one.